At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Everybody, and thank y'all again so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, as I have pointed out before, and I found a new way I would like to introduce him, but it involves foul language, so I'm not going to do it. I will just say my friend, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios. A bit overwhelmed today. I'll tell you why. My wife, if you don't know.
Here we go. My wife.
Has a green thumb and loves to grow plants. We got greenhouse. Well, we had a greenhouse. It's gone now. The wind took it.
Yeah.
But we got a garden. The inside of my house looks like a greenhouse. There's so many houseplants. Anyways, there was this event coming up called Bloomverse.
Bloomverse.
And she's already got one planned called PlantCon. And it's in October. Anyways, we went there. I thought there'd maybe be 30, 40 people in this thing. I had no idea that everybody is into houseplants. It was packed like sardines.
Like you say, like a couple hundred or like a couple thousand?
Couple thousand.
Jeez, for plants.
In a venue that probably could only hold 300. I'm sure it violated all kinds. I should have called my brother because it's in Arlington and he's a fireman in Arlington.
You're going to get everybody in trouble just so you can look at the plants?
There's like 20,000 people in here. Yeah.
Going to get everybody thrown out so you can walk around and look at plants in peace?
I hung in there for about 30 minutes and after so many people bumping into me. And just rudely, like pushing you out of the way. I was like, Lee, we got to get out of here.
Well, you point that out. It almost got into that when we were at the state fair. Got so busy there. It's crazy. Just the influx of people that are here now compared to what it is like you pointed out. Little things. Next thing you know, you're overwhelmed like a wave.
What's funny is like when I was younger, like in my 20s, crowds like that didn't bother me at all.
There weren't crowds like that.
That's a good point.
That's the other thing is they were crowds, but not like that. It wasn't overwhelming.
People ask me, like, give me.
And you're old and grumpy. That also kicks
in. Well, it's because of life, right? It beats you down. That's true. I get tickets to things. They're like, you want to go to this concert for free? I'm like, no, man, I don't.
Nope.
Can I watch it
on YouTube?
I just watch it on YouTube. Yeah.
Have they got a live episode of it on YouTube?
So I was overwhelmed by the Bloomverse show that I went to this morning.
But a good time.
And I had a good time. And then.
Wife, no plants. Came home with nothing.
Not from there. No, we stopped at another nursery on the way home.
Oh, of course. I'm like, come on, you can't come home empty-handed. You can't go through all of that.
Archie's Gardenland.
Oh,
well,
nice.
I lost a bet, so I had to pay up on the bet.
Uh-oh. I mean, let me guess. Did it have to do with, it either had to do with language or hygiene?
No, I had bet that Caleb wouldn't last more than 6 weeks in California, and he's still there.
So you know why? Because he found good fishing.
Yeah. Oh, no, he is all about the sturgeon
fishing. He's fishing up there now.
So I got PlantCon coming up in October, but I'm nervous because I got the Ducks Unlimited Expo.
Y'all.
And I didn't know till I went to the Bloomverse thing. I started looking at all the vendors.
I'm so excited.
Dude, I am beside myself.
I'm so excited.
I think it's going to be a blast.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a good time. It's going to be a great time. And it's still also new. The duck hunting stuff and all the duck stuff is still so new to us, so we get to learn all that. Yeah, it's just going to be a great time. Everybody up there, it's going to be fun. And the food will be good. It'll just be a good time.
There's going to be a Bigfoot barbecue thing that's going to be there.
Oh, word. I don't know how
they harvest them, but I'm going to ask them.
Everything's low and slow, too. That's how you got to cook the Bigfoot. I want the foot off of the big feet. Now, you're going to go ahead and sign up for the duck calling contest, right?
Why not? Maybe I'm a natural and I don't even know it, right?
Imagine
if I just started blowing a call randomly and the guy was like, man, that sounds like a hooded Maganzer. And they're like, well, you know, that's what I pattern it after.
Do you, dude? You got hell for telling stories like that.
I hope it's not over the PA system because if I have to listen to 24 hours of freaking ducks
calls
going off.
It'll probably be in another room. It would have to be in another room.
There's going to be all kinds of cool stuff there.
Yeah, it'll be pretty awesome. I'm really looking forward to it. I got something here, though, that you would probably not be looking forward to.
Okay.
This comes from a hot minute back. This actually, I believe, took place August 26th of 2014. Now, get a load of this. It says, during a tour at the Squire Boone Caverns in southern Indiana, the witness and her friend were there with a group from Munis, Indiana.
Sure.
Munis. Sure. We'll go with it.
I'll ask Logan.
Munisi. Yeah. I got to talk to Logan and find out what that is. The cavern tour was part of the itinerary after spending the previous day shopping and touring the Louisville, Kentucky area. Said the tour had reached an area with many small underground waterfalls. There were a few large flat rocks on the right side of the waterfalls, including a few overhangs. Now, this person that's talking is Gigi. Okay, they're saying that Gigi, she and her companion. So Gigi is the person we're going to be referring to on all this. So Gigi noticed what appeared to be a bright yellow eye shining from under one of the overhangs. She immediately got chills all over her body. Her friend asks what she's looking at, so she points towards the eye. Look down there. So she saw the same little eye looking back at her. So they stood there, they said, for about 5 minutes, just, well, I guess locking eyes, you could say, eye to eye, watching this thing, as this thing appeared and disappeared. They were about 30 foot from the rock. Said there was movement as well. It was very hard to see. The lighting was dim, right? No big deal. Tour starts to move on. Gigi looks back in the direction of the eye, saw something move out of the overhang. She stops, kind of leans back a little bit, like, you got to lean back around the corner.
Lean back.
Just lean back. Lean back a little bit. She said what she saw crawled out onto the open rock surface and then stood up on its back legs. It almost immediately then scurried away into another crevasse in the rock. She says it looked at first like, oh, it looks like a lizard. Had a short tail, dark skin, you know, all this stuff. The arms and legs were long. And she said that's when she realized, wait a minute, those things, the arms and legs in this little lizard are human-like arms and legs.
Uh-oh.
She said this thing's about 15 inches tall. So she bugs out, goes up with the rest of the group. The whole time she's watching behind her, right? Now, her friend never saw this little thing. But what Gigi told her, of course, when she got on the bus, she starts explaining, hey, look, this is what I saw. This is what it is, this whole thing. She goes on to say that the next day after seeing it, she felt unwell. She don't know if it was stress related, like she freaked herself out, what
yeah,
it was.
Maybe.
But she felt very, very unwell after witnessing a 15-inch lizard person. Now, look, I don't know the distance or the brightness or the light or any of that that you would be like, wait. But I, like we pointed out before, when you see something with its gait or the way it's built, it's almost like your brain instantly picks out the inconsistencies.
Right. It knows, something looks off.
Yeah. And instantly she was like, hold up. It's not standing there. Because this is the way I think of it. You've seen a lizard, like if you hold them up like you were going to just take a regular, like a mountain boomer, right? Or just any kind of old lizard. You grab them up, stand them up on their back feet. Their head and neck aren't really built for right. Shoulders the way it all works out. So it looks a little off anyway. This thing, she doesn't point that out. She points it out as like it looked like a lizard man.
Yeah, perhaps it was an extraterrestrial. They don't have to be the same height as us. Maybe no. They're really tiny. I mean,
or
Bob
maybe
Lazar
they've just been here this whole time.
Like little tiny people. Yeah, like living in the
Native
inner
Americans
Earth.
Talked about, like the ant people.
Yeah.
The little lizard. What if they are? That's the fae of the underground. The underdark.
Yeah.
Of the little tiny lizard people. So I think it's a cool story. I enjoyed it.
Well, sticking with reptiles and reptilians, check this out. It says, good morning.
Howdy.
I just discovered your podcast through a short about the thermal hunter seeing the skinwalker.
Oh, thanks so much for joining us.
He said, it sparked my interest and now I'm hooked. I think I may have a unique experience, unique in that it's not supernatural and I'm not the only one to witness this animal, nor is this an isolated to my sphere of association.
Ooh.
So to begin, I'm from Abilene, Texas. My family moved into a house on Little Lake in the middle of Abilene in the early 90s. This was a dream come true for me, being an avid hunter and fisherman. The first year we lived on the lake, my father, his business partner, and myself had taken our 20-foot pontoon boat and tied off to a rocky point at the end of an undeveloped 5-acre lot. At the end of the cove we'd lived on to crappie fish. I was at the back of the boat tossing an anchor out the back to keep the boat perpendicular to the bank when I heard my father's friend, who I have to point out is terrified of snakes, and business partner say, holy cow. I turned to see him tripping backwards over the rail from the front of the boat into the seating area while pointing into the brush lining the bank.
Uh-oh.
This is when I see the movement. I come to realize that what I'm seeing is the serpentine body of a very large snake gliding into the water. As I follow the direction of travel, I come to its football-sized head passing me at the tail of our 20-foot boat. I looked back to the bank in time to see the tail slide into the water, making this snake 20 feet long at least. Now, you may be saying to yourself, big deal. Someone let their pet python go. While I don't have a doctorate in herpetology, I am pretty well educated when it comes to reptiles, particularly snakes. There are only a few snakes on the planet known to reach these lengths. A Burmese python, a reticulated python, and the anaconda being the predominant of the three. I am well acquainted with all three. This was neither. This snake was black with muted white speckling, making a banded pattern unlike any species I'm aware of. Over the next 12 years I live on that lake, we had dozens, if not hundreds, of encounters with this animal.
Wow.
After leaving for college in 2004 and getting married and having kids, the amount of time I spent on the lake fishing fell to zero. And naturally, the encounters ended. Last year, after my father's passing, while we were out there cleaning their house out and getting mom ready to move into a retirement home, the new neighbor, who was remodeling the house next door that he had just purchased, came over to talk. In the course of our conversation, he asked me, "Had you ever seen a giant snake in this lake?" I was shocked. I said, "Yeah." He said it was stretched out and was almost as long as his 30-foot-long dock. Ugh. It was just there sunning itself. So as of 2024, this snake appears to still be a living thing. I have spent much time researching what species this could possibly be and have never come across anything known to science that would account for this thin animal. The closest coloring-wise I know of to native Texas would be a buttermilk racer or a speckled king snake. However, these only get 3 or 4 foot long. Is this a case of gigantism? Is it perhaps an unknown species, some kind of hybrid, or a pet python with rare color phases? I have no idea. The head shape and the body morphology is not like pythons or boas. I honestly have no clue. I've not seen the animal since before the iPhone, and having a camera with you at all times, I hope someday someone gets a good photo of it and this mystery can be solved in one way or the other. Keep up the good work. You have a new avid listener.
Wow.
So what's crazy about this is not just the size of it,
but the length of time.
How many that's been seen by everybody out there knows about this thing. What is it?
Do you think it could be some snake that someone released that maybe is not from here? Like, you know, I have no idea where it could be.
Well, that's.
And we're just. But I mean, it sounds like they looked for it online, like couldn't find anything that it looked like the whole deal.
Yeah, and he makes a great point. Like back when he was out there fishing all the time, there was no cameras on your phone.
Yeah, but the size of it.
And to see it multiple times by multiple people.
That's so wild.
So as recently as last year, it was seen.
See, Kyle, there are lake monsters.
I used to go to college in Abilene, Texas.
Yeah.
We should go down there.
You were in Abilene, Texas.
Yeah.
Let's not pretend like you went to a lot of college.
No, I did. I spent a lot of time fishing, but I never fished that lake. But now it makes me want to go down there.
Now we need to go.
Right.
It's not that far. We could be down there in no time.
Anyways, pretty crazy story. Thank you for sending that in.
That's awesome.
Let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, we're going to be doing, another recording we did out at Area 52. If you remember, we did an episode a couple weeks ago on cattle mutilations with David. He has more incredible sightings. It has nothing to do with cattle mutilations, but still bizarre. So let's take a break. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Back with Expanded Perspectives. We're doing a remote broadcast today. This is going to be a really special episode. We are in an area that we call Area 52. We're on a slight hunting trip for the week. And I'm here with Cam, as well as our guest, David. And what makes it so special is where Area 52 is located is literally like a mile and a half from where I had my encounter, the one with the green orb that I mention all the time. And so he can back up my claims because he was actually hunting on that lease with me when it happened. Now, if you don't remember, when I saw it, I didn't mention it because I didn't want to be ridiculed or judged or anything. So I just kept my mouth shut. Like, I'm the young guy here on the lease. I'm trying to impress these older guys. I'm not going to start making up these crazy stories. It'll be like, you're out of here, you know? And then it was only weeks later that one of the other fellows, not David, but another fellow on that deer lease with us, said he saw this crazy orb. And he started describing it, and it was green, and in his experience, it went over him. Where in my experience, I saw it move from my right to my left against the wind over this plateau. And when he said that he had his sighting, I immediately spoke up and said, man, I saw the same thing. And so we're in an area that's not very far from there. And we'd like to welcome David to the show. Welcome, David.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Kyle. And I remember that really vividly. It was pretty strange. And
do you remember what year it was? I think it was like in middle school.
It would have to be probably, I'm thinking 89.
Yeah.
Maybe possibly 90, but I think probably 89.
Yeah, that would make sense because I was a freshman in high school in 91. So
yeah,
I thought of the same. So not only did I hunt, and Cam as well, we've hunted with this fella most of our lives. So he actually taught me a lot of things about hunting, and we still hunt together today. But your friend,
yeah,
that had the same sighting. Can you explain his story?
Yeah, well, you know, from my vantage point, from what I saw, and I knew right where the other hunter was hunting. I mean, I knew exactly where he was hunting. It was kind of up on a hill, a knob, and I was down in a bottom along the creek. And I believe, correct me if I'm not remembering this correct, but you were actually on the other side of a hill down in that bottom.
Yeah, right.
And from my vantage point, it looked like this orb. And I'd say, you know, when I saw it, it looked like it didn't have just perfect edges.
Right. Yeah, me too.
And it came up over the hill where you're sitting on the other side of that hill down in the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of an open scrub brushy area.
Yeah, lots of mesquite thickets and stuff like
and
that.
And then probably to your north where it went over the other hunter, that was probably about 500 yards from you.
Yes, and it was on a separate evening. It happened to me first, and then it happened to him like 3 weeks later.
Yeah, but it was the same area from what you described, you know, from where you saw. Because I saw, when it went over him, I saw that go over him.
Oh, okay. I mean,
and me and him had that kind of private discussion then, you know, that the hell was that, you know?
That was exactly my thought.
Because it's going against a northerly breeze. It was moving north. You know, and I asked him, I said, how close was that to you? And he said, it was close. He said, it scared me. He said, because I didn't know what it was, but it's going maybe 20 yards over my head.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and, I remember it from the distance to where he was from where I was. To me, it looked like it was fairly good size, like maybe a 6 to 8 foot diameter.
Yeah, to me, when I saw it, it looked like it was about the size of a beach ball.
Oh, okay. Now, see, it looked a lot larger than that to me, but it was the same exact.
And it might have been larger. I mean, I'm looking at something that I've never seen before. So
yeah.
In the moment, you're kind of freaking out.
Yeah.
And you know, perspective is everything. It might have been much larger.
Yeah.
I was kind of freaking out because, like, I didn't know what I was looking at.
Yeah.
I frankly didn't want to be in the stand anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that was his deal. He immediately got out of the stand.
I didn't want to report
headed
it.
Back
I was
to
counting
camp.
Down the minutes. I'm like, man, the sun can't go down fast enough. Well, and in addition to me and you hunting all our lives, Cam's hunted with you. And even on different places. So you two have a history, Cam.
Oh, yeah.
Hunting with David.
Oh, we've traveled to lots of places.
Yeah. Yeah. We've hunted a lot of different places.
Not even in this state.
And, you know, the experiences that occur, especially when you spend as much time in the outdoors as what we've spent. I mean, and I know that I spent an obscene amount.
You're still spending an obscene
amount. Yeah, I still do.
I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah, I mean, we were hunting tonight.
The same. We just got back.
Well, you've had a lot of crazy experiences, so we would love to hear some of the things that you experienced that you can't quite explain. And that when it originally happened, you weren't, I'm sorry, I apologize people for the mic. We're recording at a remote place. We're not in our home studio, so.
And I can't fix it, y'all. I don't know what's going on.
I think it's my mic. Anyways, when you had these experiences, you didn't necessarily think they were out of the ordinary or at the time, but it was only later now that you can reflect back that a lot of it is added up.
Yeah, yeah.
So any of the stories you want to share, we would love to hear it.
Yeah. You know, what it is it's experiences that accumulated over a long a lot of time spending in the outdoors hunting and fishing, and then it's the what the hell was that experience?
Yeah, let's you can of course change, but maybe start with the story when you and your wife and your friend and his girlfriend had a hunting experience back in the 80s, I believe.
Yeah, varmint calling.
Yeah, why don't we start there?
Yeah, well, it was a fellow that I worked with, and he lived in a rural area, an old farmhouse. He had a screened in front porch, and he had a hound dog on the front porch that had puppies. And one day he came to work and he said, "Man," he said, "I know you varmint call a lot." He said, I think I've got a coyote problem or a predator problem. He said, my puppies are coming up missing off of my porch, you know? And he said, something's getting them. And my dog is, when I go out there at night, she is just scared to death. And I said, "Yeah, I'll bring some calls over." And that's back a long time ago when we didn't have the kind of equipment that we have nowadays. We didn't have Fox Pros. We had 6-volt square battery lights that threw kind of a circle, and you used wooden reed calls, and then some homemade calls, and I said, "Yeah, we'll come over and let's pick a time this week, and I'll show up over there and we'll go calling." My wife wanted to go, and she always enjoyed the outdoors with me. And I went ahead and grabbed my old Mossberg 500A and loaded it up with some 3-inch mag number fours. And that was always good coyote and bobcat medicine. And we headed that way. And when I saw his porch, I was thinking to myself, there ain't no coyote getting in on his screened-in porch. I mean,
it had a screen door.
Yeah, it had a screen door with an old spring. You know, the old springs that slammed the door shut. But we took off to the north from where that was, and we probably went about 3/4 mile till we got into a good clearing that was, I say a clearing because there was what I call horse grass. There was a creek that ran through here, and it grows tall, almost like a bamboo with a bushy tail on the top of it. And it's tall. It's like 6.5 feet tall. And once we cleared enough of that and we got into a little area where there was blue stem to our back, the breeze was in our face. It was a good area. It was a good kill zone area because it's maybe 35 yards across there. And man, that was plenty good. If anything comes out of that horse grass,
you got
it. I put the drop on it really quick, and with crappy lights back then, like 6-volt batteries, you know,
2 lumens.
Yeah. It was a good setup. So I began calling, and I didn't like the fact that there was 4 of us, but I dealt with it. And the girl sat down, and my buddies that I worked with sat down, and we started calling, and I'm calling. Sure enough, after a little bit, I hear something coming through. I could see the top of the horse grass moving. I knew something was coming. And then, like I said, the breeze is, you know, in our face the way it should be. And then the odor hit us. And I'm talking a nauseating, what in the hell is this? And the girls were, you know, like putting their hand over their mouth, and everybody was still being real quiet and everything. And this was a nauseating, really woke you up kind of smell. I'd say it smelled like a combination between something that rolled and something dead, or something that was dead with a skunky odor to it. And whatever was across there wouldn't come out. So I finally said, I'm sneaking across there, and I'm going in and see if I could, you know, jump this thing up and put it down. And I went across there and I snuck in, and whatever it was retreated, and I could tell it's retreating, but it ain't bolting like typically like what an animal would do that has either made you out, you know, just retreated, right. You know, it was a slow retreat, but just out of my view, out of my ability to do anything with it. And it made us all a little unnervy at the time, but it was like, what the hell is this? You know, when we talked about it, we said, it's gotta be something rolled and something dead, you know? But I said, even at that, man, that odor is like, it was really, really stout. Well, we begin to go back, you know, I think I might've called a little bit more without success. And, we ended up heading back. We were probably out for 45 minutes calling. And there really wasn't any other good areas to try to set up and have another stand. So we were throwing it in for the night. And while we're heading back across that creek, paralleling us, the horse grass was moving. And we all noticed it. I mean, every one of us noticed it. And I said, this damn thing is following us. And I thought about just, you know, ridiculously at the time, being a lot younger, ripping just a couple rounds into that horse grass, but I didn't do that. But it was like, what the hell is this, you know? And for years, we discussed it for years. I mean, even to this day, my wife has mentioned it when I'm discussing varmint calling with somebody or whatever. Remember that time we smelled? Oh yeah, I remember that time, you know, that bad stench and whatever the hell that was, you know. And she's always just said, you know, it had to be something rolling and something dead, but none of the aspects of how this animal or whatever it was acted was familiar to a varmint calling situation. I mean, all the way from the retreat to the parallel following us, you know, it was really weird. And for years and years, you know, it was one of those kind of things that just always stuck in the back of your mind, you know?
Yeah. And like I said, at the time, you weren't thinking a Bigfoot or anything.
No, I mean, that was like the furthest thing, you know, I mean, I've heard of Bigfoot at the time. I mean, we're going back. This is probably in 1979.
Just outside Springtown, Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, it was a long time ago. And you know, no, you wouldn't never think anything like that, you know. So some of the other instances that happened over the years a couple of them were around that same time frame. You know, I did a lot of bass fishing, and I had a fishing partner that actually was here in Texas that was from the Chicago area. He's a frostback, and there was a little lake outside of Weatherford, Texas, that we used to go fishing in a lot, and we'd get there early in the morning. I'd put my boat in. It'd be dark still when we put the boat in. And basically the lake wasn't all that big. I mean, I just dropped my trolling motor. We'd troll around. And one morning we're trolling back into the creek And alongside the whole creek while you're going back are elevated railroad. I say elevated railroad tracks. It was rock, you know, dirt. Almost like it was a continuation of the dam at this lake. And we heard something that was extremely loud that really puzzled us, that almost sounded like, at the time I was saying, it's gotta be a bull. That's gotta be a bull back there in those woods. It's, you know, and Dave, being from Chicago, he didn't have any clue. And as we're making our way back down that creek, quite a ways back down that creek, we heard a gigantic splash. I mean, a huge splash, like something very big fell into the water. And it did. Something very big was in the water. And when the wave came up, you know, from that coming back down the creek to the boat, you know, it confirms there something fell in the water. And as we trolled on back there, it was a big log. But it wasn't, it didn't come out of a tree above. I mean, it was like, where the hell did this thing come from and how, you know? And for years, you know, it was one of those things you always just wondered about. And then what puts it together, though, is that that sound that sounded like a bull or something. Now, fast forward all the way to like 2001 or 2002. And I was hunting a place that was an old, old farm that was kind of an abandoned farm for years. And a friend of mine ended up purchasing it. And I got permission from him to go ahead and to be able to hunt this place. And no matter if I had a lease or anything, I still had permission and I was the only one hunting it. It's not like there was, I had a friend that hunted it with me quite a bit, but anybody that hunted it had to go through me. My buddy basically gave me the hunting rights to hunt it.
Right.
And he went ahead and he put a bean field in, about a 30-acre bean field. And that bean field was just a deer magnet. And I set a bow blind up, a ladder stand, about 350, 400 yards down into that field. And the field had thick timber on both sides of it. And it had a field that made like kind of a right angle. When you first get to this bean field, there was another field that just an extension of this same field, but it wasn't planted in beans and it was all just a tall blue stem grass, but it had that same timber line, but it was shaped in a 90 degree angle. And I'm talking about a timber stand that was probably about a 200 acre thicket of real thick, heavy timber, a lot of briars, it was thick. Well, one evening, me and my son, we decided we're going to go bow hunting over there. And I went to my stand, and he had a ladder stand down that other right angle. We're probably about 500 yards apart in a straight line, 500 yards apart, maybe a little further apart than that, walking from stand to stand. And I get to my stand, and this is an evening hunt. And we're hearing I'm hearing all kinds of ruckus behind me back in that woods. I mean, a lot of ruckus. There's no cattle on this place yet. I mean, he didn't have any cows on it, you know. It's like, what the? I mean, branches are snapping. They're snarling. It's loud, really loud. And it was really uneasy. But at the time, I'm still thinking, whatever the hell this is, I'm going to run an arrow through it if it comes through here, you know?
Yeah.
And then this is a place I hunted a lot. And when you hunt a place a lot, you almost know everything around it when you're a bow hunter like that. I mean, I know every, like if somebody said, if there was a branch that fell out of a tree that was within your sight distance, you'd know. you'd like, well, that wasn't there last week. I mean,
windstorm. You see that picture over and over and over for hours.
And
at end, yeah, of course.
Well, I heard a thud, and there's a rock. And it's about the same time, still all of this commotion's going on in the woods, off and on. It stopped for a second, but it was pretty consistent. And then I heard what sounded like rocks going through, like if you threw a rock through the trees, hitting branches. And now that's really making me feel uneasy. But at the same token, your first thought is, all right, all this noise is happening behind me, but who in the F is throwing rocks at me?
Yeah, right.
You know? Well, the commotion in the woods was so loud and so disturbing that now I'm uneasy enough to where, like, I think I'm getting down and I'm heading that way towards Mark, and I'll get him. And, you know, and it's almost, I mean, I might have had maybe, plus I hate shooting a deer. Although I didn't think that was going to happen. No. And that was really crazy too. I mean, this was a place where you didn't get skunked not seeing anything. I mean, there was in the evenings deer poured into that bean field like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah. And now, I mean, with all this ruckus, I mean,
and there's nothing, hunt. There's nothing in it, nothing. And I decided, you know, the heck with this, I'm getting down. I'm not waiting until total dark, which I never shoot a deer, bow hunting back then. I didn't like to shoot a deer at last light. Anyway, I got down and I headed towards my son's where he's hunting. Well, I rounded that corner and I'm walking down there towards his stand. And the first thing he said to me when I walked up to his ladder, he said, "The hell are you doing throwing rocks at me?" I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, What are you doing? You sneaking around and trying to throw rocks at me or something?" He said, "There was rocks thrown over here." And that really freaked me out at that point. It's like,
you didn't tell him at that point.
No, no. And then he also mentioned, he started talking about the sound,
the noise,
in the woods, you know, and how loud it was. And he said, "What the hell was that?" And I said, "I have no idea, you know." And it was at that point in time, really, after that, that was disturbing enough after bow hunting my entire life. I started shooting a bow with an uncle that was a competition archer, and when I was like 6 years old. And I bow hunted, you know, my whole life. And after that, I went ahead and I still bow hunted some, never there.
Yeah. And geographically, this wasn't very far from your previous encounter in Springtown. Yeah.
No, not, I mean, it was far enough, but no, it's not geographically all.
What I mean is it wasn't another state. You're talking
probably
20 miles away.
Yeah. 20, 25. Yeah. And back then that area was a lot different, even 25 years ago from what it is now.
Oh yeah.
It is a whole lot different, but, I still bow hunted some down in South Texas and in the hill country and stuff like that. But pretty much not that much no more. It was like, I don't know what the hell that was, but I don't feel comfortable.
Like from that day.
Yeah. Like from that day, I did not feel
driving home. It changed your mind. You're like, Yeah, I don't think I'm doing this again.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we talk about it on the show all the time. People have these strange encounters, and like it made you change your mind about bow hunting. Some people completely give up hunting after their experience, but you didn't.
Yeah.
But you just prefer to hunt with a rifle now.
But there was one other experience on that place that actually occurred before this one.
This is the turkey hunting story?
No, this is, I was... There was a place on that. There was an area on that same land that we called the Sippy Hole, because it was a natural spring that came out. And it was really, really, that's what made this place between the fertile soil and the natural spring. This place was a heaven for game. And the sippy hole was a long walk back to where the sippy hole was. And it was more in there was kind of a two track that went alongside a fence and then heavy timber. And it was another stand of heavy timber that was divided by that bean field, basically, that was probably another couple hundred acres of heavy timber. So I had to walk around this heavy timber instead of through it. And so it took me a long time to go back there, and I misjudged it one morning. It was a morning hunt. And I called a buddy of mine that hunted on that place with me quite a bit, and I asked him if he was going to be out there today, and he said no. So I'm the only one, you know, on the place. And I was on this place a lot. I mean, I was out there a lot. I spent a lot of time in the woods sitting and hunting. Even when it wasn't hunting season, I spent a lot of time just sitting and watching game. Back then, me and my wife, we ran video and recorded a lot of wildlife. And that was just something that we loved to do. So anyway, I get back to the sippy hole and I realize I might have got back here a little bit too early. It didn't take me quite as long to get back here.
When that happens. And so now you're stuck there.
Now I'm stuck there. And I don't have a stand back here at this spot. I'm just sitting up against a tree. I've got my back against a tree and it's twilighty. But, you know, once your eyes adjust and everything, you could see a little bit into the dark. And I see a figure, and it looks to me like a person easing through the woods. And the first thing that comes to mind is it's a poacher, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have to make sure. And I'm thinking, did my buddy actually change his mind and come out, you know? And this is a good number of years before what happened at the woods where I finally, you know, pretty much hung up my bow. And so in my mind, I was convinced enough that it was somebody. I called out my friend's name and it stopped. The figure stopped, but it didn't reply back. And I wasn't sure if it could see where I'm at. I'm fully camoed. I'm up against a tree, sitting on the ground, not elevated or anything.
In the wee hours of early morning.
In the wee hours of early morning. And then it started moving again, and it moved towards the sippy hole, which was the natural spring, and it was shallow water. It was beautifully clear water. And that's the way it went. And it never, and then it went out of sight. And I'm just thinking to myself, what the hell? I can't believe as soon as it gets light, I'm going to go find this son of a gun. I'm thinking in my head, it's not logical. Nobody can move through there in the darkness without a light. I mean, not through this timber. And it's just, no one's going to do that. I mean, nobody. And when it got light enough to get up and to go see, you know, I got up and I walked over there, and what I saw was human footprints that were about the size of just a man, just a person's
barefoot. Yeah.
That went into the sippy hole, and I could still see the soil and the water drifting slowly away. And it's like, what the hell? And even at that, I never thought really Bigfoot. I thought, you know, did I just see a freaking Indian ghost maybe or something, you know? I mean, but I'm looking at footprints, but the footprints didn't go all the way across. And I didn't see no footprints that turned back around. And
so it went into the creek, but it didn't reach the other side.
But, you know, I wasn't 100% convinced that it didn't reach the other side. So I decided what I'm going to do is I'm going to hot foot it, because I'm not going to go through the creek and everything. I'm going to hot foot it all the way back around, come up through the bean field and come into the other part of the sippy hole from the other side and see if I could find any tracks. And I did that, but I never did find any other tracks. And that's pretty damn strange, you know?
Oh, yeah. I'd say all three encounters are very strange.
But you double-checked. There was nothing on the other side. That thing went in there.
Yeah, it went in there.
And never come out. Vanished in the center.
Well, let's put it, there was no evidence of me finding that it came out.
Yeah, yeah. You found no sign.
Yeah, no
that
sign.
That led you to believe that that thing ever come out of where it ran into.
Right.
Which is the middle of a natural spring.
Yeah. Yep.
So for a while, did you still continue to think that, man, there was a poacher out there?
No, not really. I mean, because you can't, because nobody's walking in Texas barefoot.
No.
You know what I mean? And plus, it's gun season. And even though,
I mean, good point.
Nobody's walking around in there.
Did it feel like a spirit? Like, you were like, I may have seen some.
You know, you ponder all types of things. You just don't know. You know what I mean? I mean, so you just don't know. But I chalked it up to just another one of these, what the hell? You know, I mean, really, really odd stuff, you know? And I've had experiences with other odd things too. I'm one of those individuals that just I've had a lot of odd experiences over the years.
It's drawn to you.
And there's big gaps of time in all of those different things, you know. I mean, I actually honestly do believe that I experienced staying in a haunted house at time that we were hunting.
Tell us that story.
Yeah, well, that ranch was in a unique location, and what was funny about that ranch is when I started hunting that ranch, and it had some monster deer on it, which we know.
Where is this at?
It was right on the Red River.
Oh, okay, Red River.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it was a big ranch, and there were some guys that hunted on that ranch for 20 something years, and there was an old house that sat a couple miles back into this place that we had access to, and they told us, you know, you could stay there if you want to. And I was kind of shocked that none of the other guys stay there. They don't stay there. They'll come down there. They used to come down there in the daytime and use the stove in the kitchen or maybe take a shower, but then
never
they left.
Stay the night.
But
they never stayed
the night. And it was dead giveaway.
And
it was.
Guys aren't sitting around drinking around the house. Dead giveaway. Don't stay in there.
Yeah, it was really weird. But me and my wife were like, it's kind of cool, you know. We got the whole house to ourselves all the time, you know. And one night we're staying there, and there was other accommodations, but they weren't nowhere near as nice as that house. They had a middle building that was about a mile from where the house is that you couldn't even see from there, you know, but that they had some bunks and accommodations that weren't nothing like even this where we're staying now. This is nice.
Yeah.
This was a middle building with some wooden bunks.
And they chose to stay there instead of the house.
That's where they slept.
That's red flag number two.
That's where they slept.
Yeah. They could at least have warned you.
Well, they did after the fact, because I guess there was
that's super helpful.
Well, but it really wasn't a warning. It was like they kind of took pleasure in the fact that, you know, like, ha,
now you know.
Yeah, now you know why we don't stay there, you know. And I'm like, well, me and my wife ain't sleeping in it, because at the other accommodations, it was more like a bunkhouse where,
like a hostel. It's just wide open for everybody.
Yeah, it's wide. Yeah, yeah. You know,
because it's normally a bunch of dudes.
Yeah, right. But me and my wife, we go together a lot. Yeah. You know, and anyway, it had a master bedroom, so me and my wife put our stuff in there. But there was nothing in that master bedroom but a bed. No dresser, no nothing, just a bed. And we've already stayed there a few times and without incident, you know. But one night we're there and we're staying there and we just went to bed. And let me back up. The night before this occurred in the bedroom there, I did hear, I got up in the middle of the night because I thought I heard somebody in the kitchen. And I thought, well, somebody's came, you know. And I got up and I went in the kitchen, but there wasn't nobody there. Nobody here. And I looked out the front window and no new view, nobody else came there, you know.
And again, you're not thinking anything of it at this point.
No, not really.
Just like, I'm going back to bed. I thought I heard something.
Yeah, going back to bed.
That's it.
So anyway, the very next night we decide, you know, we're going to bed and we get in bed and it's right when you're just getting into that twilight state and you're just falling asleep and I hear a loud pop. Like almost like if you took a big rubber band and you popped it against maybe a beer can or something, you know, but right there in the room, you know. And it woke me up, I mean, both of us, my wife too. And I said, what the hell was that? And she said, it must be a mouse trap. Somebody must have put a mouse trap in here. So I got up and I turned the light on and I looked under the bed thinking there's a mouse trap here, you know. There ain't no damn mouse trap under the bed.
Just a demon.
And it's like, what the hell was that? Well, the next morning when I got up, this room, like I said, didn't have any furniture in it. I have a habit, maybe some will think that this is a irresponsible way of doing firearms, but my bolt action rifle, I just shove when I'm done hunting, I open up the rack and I just shove the bullet down into the magazine and I slide the bolt back over it. So there's nothing in the chamber. Well, I leaned it up in the corner in that room and I went to look at my gun and the noise that I heard was that something depressed the trigger and it was the firing pin. And I showed my wife immediately and she said, that's impossible. And I said, well, tell me if it sounded like this. And I
racked the bolt
and squeezed the trigger. And she said, that's exactly what it sounded like.
It had never happened before with that rifle. It's
never happened since. And then after we get up and everything and we're talking about it and she'd never admit that if she did feel a little bit uneasy about it or anything. I mean, she's not going to admit it, you know,
Stonewall.
Yeah. Well, but she said, well, you know, why don't we were going to stay for a couple more days. And at this point I decided I ain't sleeping here again tonight. You know, I'd rather go home.
I'm done.
And, so we loaded up the car.
Imagine if the gun was loaded.
I know.
It would have went off in the middle of the night. Talk about being scared.
Yeah. It would have been crazy.
You'd have watered yourself like a little old baby.
Oh man. I mean, that's a really, really strange thing. And definitely.
So when you were about to leave, you said another fella had just pulled up.
Yeah. He came all the way up from Austin and he was a duck hunter. Okay. Cause this is a big ranch and it's on the Red River and he was going to duck hunt. And I know this fella through other people. He's not a deer hunter, but I know him. I'm loading up the truck and he just pulls in and he says, Mr. He called me by my name and he said, where are you going? And I said, we're just going to go on home. He said, man, I was told y'all were going to be here for a few days. And I said, well, we decided we're going to go home. And, He said, oh, man. He said, I've drove all the way up here from Austin. And I said, well, what's the problem? I said, go duck hunting, have fun, you know. And he said, I'm not staying here by myself. He said, I've done that before. I said, oh, okay. I said, that's why we're kind of leaving too. I said, what happened? And he said, last time I was here and nobody was here. And I thought, oh, great. I got this house to myself. He said, it sounded like the damn devil was in the kitchen with hooves dancing. He said, and I got up and there wasn't nobody in the damn kitchen. And he said, I'm not staying here. He said, I'll drive 4 hours back to Austin.
He's like, I'm fine.
And, that's what he did. He did not stay.
Wow.
Man.
Man.
He's like, mm-mm. It's not for me. I'm out.
So then some of the guys that have hunted on that place for 20-something years, one of them, after that, I got to where I'd go up and stay in the
metal building.
Metal building.
Yeah. You wouldn't go stay in the house.
And
like, nope.
But I got just like those guys. I'd go down there, use a stove in the middle of the day or whatever, you know. And one day I'm down there, and one of them that hunted that place for 21 years, he hunted it. And he said, y'all were staying here quite a bit for a while, weren't you? And I said, yeah. He said, what happened that you're not staying down here no more? And he had a smirk on his face. And I said, well, let me ask you something. I said, what happened that you don't stay down here? And he smiled and he said, I think this damn place is pretty haunted.
He didn't even try to hide it.
He's like, man.
And I said, I think you're right. And ended up talking to the landowner about it. And yeah, there was, it had a past. It had a past and it had a dark history, and it was kind of weird. But, you know, talking about things that are nutty and happen, and in that whole conversation there, that one of the landowners of the ranch that I was talking to, he told me that they actually, when he was younger, they stayed in that house, lived in it for a while.
Oh no.
And he said they had some strange experiences. Yeah. And he said, this is weird. He said, I don't know what you think about things like Bigfoot. And I said, why? What's happened out here with something like that? And he said, well, he said, I don't believe in nothing like that. He said, but my older brother, he says that he saw Bigfoot on this ranch 2 times. He said, once walking by this house he was in the house, and he said it walked past it. They had the living room, the windows were real tall. You couldn't just, well, I say that. They were regular sill height on the front of the house. But the living room, this is a nice house. It was like an old German-style house. And it had a nice dining room with double French doors that opened up into it, but it's real old. And the windows on the side of the house in the living room were way elevated. You couldn't look out.
Right, okay.
You know, it was more like to let light in.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he claimed that his brother saw a big, giant, hairy head walk by that
window. One of those tall windows.
And then he said in this other part of the ranch that his the same brother claimed that he was deer hunting and sitting, and that he saw what he said was a Bigfoot. And I said, well, I got to tell you, if you ask me if I believe in ghosts, I'm going to tell you hell yes, because my gun doesn't usually
discharge by itself.
Ever. Even though, yeah.
How many pound trigger was that?
Yeah, right.
By the way.
Yeah, that's really, really a crazy thing that happened. I mean, it was really weird, you know. But so there's been
it was an unspoken thing. Like everybody on the whole place knew.
Oh, yeah, they all knew.
Let everybody else figure it out on their own. Yeah. They're like, let's just see.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, really, it's the best way to do it.
Yeah,
because then you're going to be, am I crazy? And then they stay, and you're like, if they've stayed there, and let's say you and your wife had gone in and stayed and it just stayed there the whole time y'all hunted, and nothing had ever happened, they would all think, well, maybe I just had something strange happen. No big deal.
Yeah.
But when everybody, time and time again, is like, I don't stay here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, nobody wants to stay there.
Well,
and then you find out the history, you're like,
oh, yeah. Well, the one fellow that was, that told me about it after asking me what happened that we don't stay there, he told me that anytime the place changes hands, he said, where you got new hunters coming in on it, they'll lose a hunter or two, and then they bring in new hunters. He said they always stay here, and then they're not. Sometimes somebody will say something, and sometimes...
So it's a cycle that the people that have leased it witnessed. Yeah,
for 21 years, they've... So they kind of knew,
people.
So to them, it was like kind of, let's see when the new people quit staying at the house.
The devil and his cousins are all in that house.
The turnover rate is insane, right? Yeah. Because people only hunt one season. They're like, I think I'm out of there.
That's not that much fun after all.
Yeah. So that was pretty, pretty hair raising.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Crazy sightings. David, we've known him our whole life. He's just one of those people that is very sensitive to things. What I mean is unusual encounters and stuff always seem to happen to him. Like we always talk about, me and you are very dense where there are people.
Oh, yeah.
That, I don't know what you want to call it. They have the ability to perceive things that I don't. And he's just had a lifetime of crazy encounters. And what's crazy is... it's right near where we live.
In this area. In this area for quite some time.
But, as a child, I always thought about Bigfoot and stuff living in, the Pacific Northwest. But then it comes to find out they're literally everywhere, even right here in our own county.
Oh, yeah. Like we had discussed whenever we talked to Gary, there's a lot more was going on around here than I realized.
I agree.
Like there is a lot more, even after doing the show, starting to do all that, you start finding out a lot more stuff. And that's the thing that we always point to with everybody that, we discuss with is look around your own hometown. You'd be surprised at the amount of strange things that take place right under your nose, right? Like neighbors or just the one town over, I'll give you like a strange, for instance, like we had discussed is like, we were laughing about Robert E. Howard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the man that wrote Conan, if you're a big Conan the Barbarian fan, was in Poolville, Texas, just north of us by no distance whatsoever. That's where he was born, raised, the whole thing. Turns out my grandfather, his family, knew his other family. Like they all knew each other because it's the whole deal. Pretty crazy thing to even think that something that I've loved since I was a kid, right? Like the idea of sword and sorcery and Conan the Barbarian was right here.
I know, right?
Just right there.
I think about it sometimes when I'm driving out there, like that guy must have been looking at these same pastures.
Yep.
What on earth made him create Conan the Barbarian?
Conan made him create Conan.
I'm surprised they haven't tried to redo that. They just constantly keep redoing
stuff. They did with Momoa.
Yeah, but I'm surprised they haven't done it even more. Repeat.
I read something to where Schwarzenegger was talking about doing it one more time. But as he's like the old Conan, maybe handing it off. Or something like that. But the whole deal, but the think of the idea of Schwarzenegger as Conan as an old man now would be amazing because that's the way, because Conan was the king, right? That's how it starts. Yeah. Conan's the king. And then you go back and see how he got there. But to see it now would be cool.
So it's a movie review time.
What did he take it? Is this the Bambi film?
That's right. Yes, sir.
Okay. What was the name of the film? Come on, look it up. You have a computer in front of you that costs more than $3. So I'm sure you can actually operate and make it work.
It's Bambi, The Reckoning or something. Hold on, I'll try to find it.
Because the only one that I remember is the...
Yeah, Bambi, The Reckoning.
So it was Pooh, Blood and Honey.
Yeah, that Winnie was
the
different
Pooh one. Yeah. And then there was another one wasn't there?
There's a Pinocchio one that hasn't come out yet.
Okay.
Oh, there was Screamboat, where it's Steamboat Willie killing everyone.
Now you've gone to see Bambi, The Reckoning.
Yeah.
Now,
don't do it.
Does Luke listen? No.
So you can say that you don't give it a 10 out of 10. You won't hurt anybody's feelings today.
Yeah, it's you know, it's what it is. He loves the horror. Him and my wife are exactly the same. They'll watch anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother him that it's completely ridiculous.
Was it hot take or was it just a regular take? Is it terrible?
Yeah, I wouldn't
say. It's not your jam. I wouldn't say terrible. It's not your jam.
I'll tell you this. What's funny to me is you can tell all these movies, for whatever reason, are made over in the UK.
Okay.
And you can tell because whenever they're using firearms, they don't even know how to hold them properly.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
Like numerous times I was watching the way they were holding them and I was clearly pointing, I'm like, that gun's not cocked. And Lee's like, what are you talking about? Well, look at the hammer. And then it's going off, you know, just silly things you notice.
Yeah.
And then the deer is impossible in size, yet it fits into a bathroom at one point. I'm like, well, how did it?
See.
It's the size.
You've already ruined it before you even got in there. You're no fun to watch movies.
It's size. It's the size of like a moose. Right,
it's got the reckoning.
It drank some kind of like toxic waste, and it's got like chronic waste.
Spoiler
disease.
Alert! Maybe somebody wants to see it.
I think the only I don't know where you could. I don't know where you could find it, but I'm sure you could go search.
So it's
for
got CWD from toxic waste, and then it turns into a giant revenge killing deer.
The best part is there's other animals in the woods that have been corrupted by this disease. So there's killer cottontail rabbits. Thumper makes an appearance.
Oh, I like this already.
And there's a group of carnivorous rabbits. This guy is walking in the woods, kicks one of the rabbits. Uh-oh. Then he trips later and falls into a bear trap. He's stuck on the ground, and all these rabbits eat him alive.
I like this.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I like this. It's like a mad druid.
Yeah, so.
So, I like your I like your movie reviews.
Like I said, the next one
What's
coming.
What's the next one you're going to have to
see? Some kind of Pinocchio one.
You very rarely go unless it's something nonsense like this now, don't you?
I don't go to horror movies at all unless only to appease Luke, so. But my wife and them, they go like once a week.
So did you have to tell Luke it's 10 out of 10?
I did. I told him it was a 9 out of 10. I wanted to switch it up a little.
Yeah. Did you say it's because of the poor firearm management?
Yeah, that's I didn't why. Like that.
Like,
yeah.
I just can't go that route.
Yeah.
Hey, it's fair enough. Fair enough. I get
Anyways,
it.
Anyways, what do you got planned?
What
did you do this last week?
A quick visit with my daughter. She got home. She's got to go see some friends. Then she comes back and then she leaves town again. So that'll be a blurry visit. Not much, man. Just, I got a lot of stuff done around here, around the house I wanted to get done. Got to help my son with some stuff. Just covering a lot of bases as we prep to go out of town.
You know, I have to give credence to or applause to how well Amazon does at delivering things. Because recently, on my way to the expo, I had to order more show stickers to give away.
Yes.
I order from this company all the time.
Yeah.
Well, Friday of last week, I get an alert saying my stuff's been delivered. Awesome. Me and Dalia running errands in Hudson Oaks. I stop at the UPS store to pick up the stickers. They're like, we don't have them. I'm like, well, I got this email. And I show them the email and they're like, nah, we don't have it. I'm like, okay. And it says it was delivered. Can you tell me where it was delivered? They said, yeah, Fort Worth. I go, where in Fort Worth? I don't know. It just says Fort Worth. Hmm. So I go and I call UPS customer service to find out where the package is. Of course, I'm talking to somebody from overseas. I mean, barely can understand.
And yeah, you know, so you have no idea where the stickers are.
And he wants the tracking number. I give it to him. And then he's like, yo, yeah, it's been delivered. I go, where has it been delivered? He's like, because of security reasons, I can't tell you that.
But it's mine.
That's what I said. And I go, oh, you can't even tell me the address. He's like, no.
So do they go pick them up and bring them back? Is that how you got them?
No. So I'm like, well, can you tell me the name of the business? So finally, after arguing with the guy for like 10 or 15 minutes, he tells me the name of the business. It's a business I've never heard of. I'm like, all right, well, I guess I got pretty short with them on the phone. I was like, you know who never messes up package delivery? Amazon.
Here we go.
They never mess it up.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
So then I went to the back to the sticker company that I always order it. Guess what? They don't have a phone number. You can't call them. You can start an e-ticket and start this email thread.
That's
and I'm
the
like,
last time we're using those people.
So I start looking into the name the guy gave me. And I start trying to find it. And it's got a similar name to like 8 other businesses in Fort Worth. But one of them I noticed is exactly where I used to work, Appraisal Source. So I still have a friend that works there. I guess they changed the name. I called him and I'm like, Corey, are you at the office? He's like, no. I go, well, that tells me that UPS, for whatever reason, dropped my stickers off at that location. I ain't worked there in 9 years. He's like, all right, let me call the owner and find out. He calls me back. And he's like, yeah, they're there. I go, will you pick them up for me? He's like, yeah. And I go, what's up with the name? He's like, oh, your old boss sold the business to this guy and changed the name. But how?
Maybe you can go back by
I mean, I just ordered from UPS 2 weeks ago stabilizers. How do they, and that's where I always have my stuff delivered is to the UPS store because I don't want like expensive camera equipment.
Well, I don't think it was UPS. I bet it was the sticker company.
Well, whatever.
They pulled a dummy move.
Yeah, and same thing.
So these stickers have been around the world and we have them now.
I have them now.
I have a stack of stickers.
And I'll be giving them away at the Ducks Unlimited Expo.
We'll have some with us at the expo.
Yeah.
We'll be good to go.
If you have any cool stories you'd like to share with me and Cam, you can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com.
See us at the expo.
You can see us at the expo. You can call the hotline, 888-393-2783. And we would love to hear your stories. Let's not forget about our sponsor, Green Chef. Make this summer your healthiest yet with Green Chef. Head to greenchef.com/50expanded and use the code 50expanded to get 50% off your first month. Then 20% off for 2 months with free shipping. You're going to love it. Me and Cam love it.
Oh, yeah.
Cam, what do you got planned for this X coming week? I know we're going out of town, but you got a short week. Do you got anything you got to get done before we leave?
Nothing. Wait. Yeah, I've got to pick up my wife's car.
Oh, yeah, you're getting a new car.
Yeah, I had to get it. Yeah, because the hard water totaled the other one. I hate going through all this.
Me too. I've got three vehicles that have been damaged by the hailstones. My wife's Tahoe is in the shop now. When that gets out, then I got to put the other ones in. So this is going to take like 4 months just to get them all repaired, right?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it could be worse. You know, it's one of those deals, but it's just.
It always could be worse, right? But it also could always be better.
Yeah. And it's just draining. You're just like, I'm just ready for it to be over with. So that's about it. Once we get that squared away, that's about it. I'll be ready to go out of town.
Luke is already getting bummed out because he knows that summer is almost at an end. So he's already counting down the days. Staying up late, staying up all night playing video games with his buddies and sleeping all day like a vampire.
Oh,
he's
going
to have to change all that.
He's not going to like that.
Anyways, I hope to see some of you at the expo. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.